Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, February 4th, 2015. Three passengers, including a senior government official on board a WFP helicopter, were detained but are free to go, according to rebel officials.
We received indications that the three passengers were well. We received assurances that we could pick them up this Wednesday.
And South Sudanese officials say Ugandan forces will stay in South Sudan for another 4 months.
We are a sovereign country, so we can agree with any country here in the region that is working with us, you know, to support us. And the time of support depends on our need. We can still extend the mandate.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations World Food Program, or WFP, says three people who were held in a rebel-controlled area of Jonglei State's Ayot County are safe and will be returned to Juba. The three passengers on WFP helicopter were detained by rebels yesterday. VOA fellow Lucy Pony has more on this story from Washington.
George Fominien, the spokesperson of WFP in South Sudan, says the helicopter was on a routine flight from one area to another during a series of flights when three passengers were detained at a stopover.
One of the helicopters of the UN Humanitarian Air Service, which was on a regular passenger flight, and this it was doing a service from Juba to Bo, from Bo to Mabio, and from Mabio to Jich, and Jich, it was supposed to go to Gorwai and then to Boa and to Juba.
Fominien declined to identify the three held in Jich, but relatives and government officials say they are Azaya Chola Rai, the chairperson of South Sudan's National Bureau of Statistics, Jacob Aler Longar, and Mading Akweth, both of whom work for unnamed non-governmental organizations. Fominien says WFP has been in touch with SPLA in opposition officials who have agreed to release the passengers.
Indications that the three passengers were well. We received assurances that we could pick them up this Wednesday.
SPLA in opposition military spokesman Lul Roy Kong says the three have already been released and are waiting to be flown to Juba. He explains why the officials were detained.
The plane landed in our area without permission and without authorization, and we took into protective custody, of course, very senior government officials. I've just spoken to our CNC, Dr. Riek Machar. He told me that he gave orders for these three officials to be released, and he personally spoke to Mr. Isaiah Chola Roy, the chairman of Bureau of Statistics and Census. And we are actually waiting for UN to send a plane to take these officials back to Juba.
Kong says the three were only being held for questioning.
Well, of course, these are government officials. You know we are at war, and anybody that gets into one territory without permission, without authorization, is subject to questioning.
Kong insists the intervention of rebel leader Riek Machar is a goodwill gesture to the government and the people of South Sudan to show that they have no intention of hurting anyone in their custody.
It is not our culture to mistreat people who are in our care. This is not the first time for government officials to find themselves in areas under control. They are safe, they are sound.
Fominien says humanitarian air services play a crucial role in reaching many South Sudanese in need of assistance who cannot be accessed by road.
At this point in time, as I reminded you, the United Nations Humanitarian Air Service is a vital service in helping humanitarian workers and people who are working in humanitarian domains to provide necessary assistance and urgently needed assistance across South Sudan.
Fominien says WFP seeks the cooperation from all parties in the South Sudanese conflict so that it can safely deliver humanitarian aid to people in need, particularly those in remote areas. This is the first time passengers traveling on humanitarian air services have been detained by forces of either side since the conflict started more than 13 months ago. The three passengers were picked in Mabor, part of Twich East County in Jonglei State, under government control. The three were detained at a stopover in Jich an area of Ayot County, which is controlled by rebels. Fominien declined to explain why the passengers were not allowed to continue along with the others on board. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony.
Philip Thonaleu contributed to this report from Juba. South Sudanese officials say the Uganda People's Defense Force is going to remain in South Sudan until at least June. South Sudan's Foreign Affairs Ministry says the mandate allowing Ugandan forces to deploy in South Sudan has been extended for 4 months. He says the UPDF needs to remain in the neighboring South Sudan until peace has been restored. VOA fellow Nabil Biagio has this report.
Foreign Affairs Ministry spokesman Maiwen McCall Arik says the extended mandate will allow the UPDF to continue protecting key government installations.
The extension now is important because we are still in need. You know, we have our bilateral relations with Uganda, and we are a sovereign country. So we can agree with any country here in the region that is working with us, you know, to support us. And the time of support depends on our need. We can still extend the mandate.
The agreement comes just a week after President Salva Kiir and armed opposition leader Riek Machar signed a power-sharing agreement in Addis Ababa. In the agreement, the two men pledge to respect a secession of hostilities agreement that was signed more than a year ago but has been repeatedly violated. One clause of the year-old secession of hostilities pact says that all foreign forces or armed groups that have been invited to fight for either side in the conflict in South Sudan should be redeployed or, quote, progressively withdrawn from the theater of operations, unquote. Machar complained just last month that that has not happened and the UPDF is still in South Sudan. But McCall says it is still too early for the UPDF to leave.
But we agree, we have guaranteed the strict implementation by the two sides of the cessation of hostilities and the permanent ceasefire. Then we can begin gradually to think differently, to try to say, okay, now we have peace, so we don't need another foreign troops.
President Kiir is said to have invited Ugandan forces into South Sudan at the start of the conflict in December 2013 to help secure Juba. South Sudan in Focus was unable to reach anyone from the UPDF for a comment. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
That report was prepared by Mungume Devs Rakarinj in Juba. South Sudanese officials say it is trying to reduce corruption at all levels of government. The country's interior minister used the graduation ceremony of police cadets yesterday to warn police officers against taking bribes, harassing citizens, or abusing people's rights. Charlton Doki has more on this story from Juba.
More than 1,000 male and female police cadets were all smiles as they graduated from the John Garang Unified Training Center in Rajaf, just outside Juba. Following 9 months of training in specialized areas such as criminal investigations and immigration control, the officers are being deployed to South Sudan's criminal investigation and immigration departments. South Sudan's Interior Minister, Aleu Ayeny Aleu, reminded the officers not to accept bribes.
The official bishop, Aleinu, CID, immigration is a place for making money. We will follow you very carefully. It's not a place for making money. We are struggling very hard, and that's why the parliament is here. The best police is a police well paid. He will not look for briberies.
A report produced by the Juba-based SAD Institute in 2013 indicated that most South Sudanese have a negative perception of their police force. The report found that the overwhelming majority of citizens see the police not only as an ineffective force incapable of protecting their lives and property, but one which harasses, beats and tortures people and routinely extorts money from civilians. General Pieng Denkwol, Inspector General of South Sudan's Police Service, urged the new police recruits to work hard to repair that battered image.
We want to repeat that always our strategy and our philosophy is community service. We are here to serve the community. We are here to serve our people. And for sure, every one of us and these graduates, they have been taught or they have been trained for all this.
Aleu called on police officers to be the guardians of the rights of the South Sudanese people. He says they must work particularly hard to ensure that foreigners feel safe in South Sudan.
The reason is that we respect foreigners. And with your coming in, we need more respect, such that this country become attractive to everybody to come in. And it is your duty to protect them and to protect investors.
Central Equatoria State's Deputy Governor Manasse Lomole called on the new officers to steer clear of tribalism.
You have been trained together, and I'm very confident that you will go from this training school as one people of one nation. That your tribe is the police service. That is your tribe. Your tribe is South Sudan, and you should serve our people equally, irrespective of where they come from, because we belong to the same nation.
The officers who graduated today were recruited from all 10 states of South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. UNICEF is warning of a child malnutrition crisis in South Sudan, which it says has worsened because of the ongoing fighting. That story is coming up next.
South Sudan in Focus listeners can find us on the following shortwave frequencies: 11900, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. We're also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
which of your country's festivals do you enjoy most?
I love the cultural festivals because it shows the culture of different ethnic tribes in the country. For example, when you have like university cultural days, you see the different cultures from different schools and you're just amazed. Like, it's just wonderful. It's nice.
I enjoy on Easter. During Easter, Good Fridays, going out with my friends, yeah, having fun.
Not enjoying really, but I like more Madaraka Day because it's a day where we reminisce on the struggles which we face to liberate ourselves from the colonial yoke and to establish self-rule as a country.
I enjoy the Kampala Carnival. I get to see a lot of people. I like communities flooded with people because I'm a social worker.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The ongoing conflict in South Sudan is creating catastrophic food shortages in the country's worst affected areas, according to new research conducted by UNICEF South Sudan. The latest Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, report released last week suggests the fighting has also seriously impeded humanitarian access to those who need assistance most. Dan Porter, UNICEF's chief communication officer in South Sudan, says at least 229,000 children are suffering from severe or acute malnutrition in South Sudan, a number that has doubled since the start of the conflict over a year ago.
Children are extremely vulnerable, so we're very worried about the ability of people to get food and to get good nutrition. Large numbers of people are moving now in conflict areas, not just because of the conflict, but also because of food shortages.
Porter says, based on the findings from the latest Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, report released last week, the conflict is reducing food supplies and making it difficult, if not impossible, to reach displaced people in remote rural areas as well as those in IDP camps.
Being able to get access to those areas is extremely important. Allowing people to be able to circulate freely is also very, very important. And as far as the future is concerned, people need to be able to have access to markets. None of these things are happening systematically now in the conflict areas, and it's really leading to a dire situation.
UNICEF staff and its partners say they are now seeing a large number of people on the move in conflict areas because of food shortages. WFP and UNICEF continue to increase aid for malnourished children across South Sudan. Porter says UNICEF and its partners have provided therapeutic feeding treatment programs for almost all South Sudanese children affected by conflict by the conflict last year. She says they hope to reach 137,000 children under the age of 5 suffering from severe acute malnutrition this year.
Children suffering from severe acute malnutrition are about 9 times more likely to die from any other complication than a child who's not suffering from malnutrition. So it's a very dangerous situation for children. We have, over the last year, been able to treat nearly 100,000 children with severe acute malnutrition with specific treatment programs.
According to the IPC research, only a rapid scaling up of humanitarian aid would prevent a worsening of the nutrition situation, particularly in the hardest hit areas, which are Jonglei, Upper Nile, and Unity States. Apart from confronting the nutrition crisis, UNICEF staff also is busy registering unaccompanied children in order to reunify them with their families, provide basic health and education services, and deliver supplies to provide safe water. UNICEF has helped more than 600,000 people, including over 142,000 children under the age of 5 last year. UNICEF is sending out an urgent appeal for additional funding of some $34 million to boost its nutrition response in South Sudan this year. South Sudan in Focus was unable to reach officials in the Ministry of Health for comment on this report, which was prepared by Jacob Achiek in Juba. We now move to Western Bahr al-Ghazal. Violent disputes between farmers and cattle keepers are on the rise in Western Bahr al-Ghazal state. An elder from the state says the government must do more to stop the clashes before more lives are lost. VOA fellow Michael Atit reports from Washington.
Ufondi Ndima says the government must protect farmers across South Sudan. He says their livelihoods are at risk from the cattle that trampled and eat their crops. And now their lives are in danger too because cattle herders have very easy access to farmers and security forces are not providing protection against attacks.
Our area is being invaded by people armed with the latest weapons and under the pretext of saying they are actually herding their cattle. But in the end, they encroach upon our livelihood, our farms.
In May last year, farmers in Western Bahr al-Ghazal clashed with cattle keepers from neighboring Warapi State in Momoi area of Wau County. At least 2 people were killed in those clashes. Ndima says farmers and cattle keepers were able to coexist relatively peacefully in the past.
Our farm, which is the source of our living, which is the source of our economy, which is the source of our survival, this two society of the agricultural people is against the cattle-keeping people. All the past administration, there was no such thing, such kind of violations of people's rights. But why is it happening now? Why should it be left to continue?
Ndima says both farming and cattle herding are essential to the economy of South Sudan. He says the government must provide security for both communities and take steps to help the 2 communities live together in peace.
The people in authority create a harmonious mechanism for coexistence that used to be in the past, and people never clashed.
The 13-month-old conflict in South Sudan has played a role in heightening the tensions between farmers and herders. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, said in late December that the fighting in South Sudan has disrupted normal patterns of cattle migration and forced livestock herders to go into the farming areas. This set up the two communities for clashes as the farmers tried to protect their crops from being eaten or trampled by cows, the FAO said. The UN agency says because security forces are unavailable to protect the two communities, violence between herders and farmers has reached unprecedented levels in parts of South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Washington.
We now turn to Nigeria-Cameroon border, where Chadian army has engaged in heavy clashes with Boko Haram militants. Chadians say more than 200 Boko Haram fighters were killed yesterday. More fighting was reported in the area today, as we hear from Muki Edwin Kinzeka in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé.
Witnesses say hundreds of suspected Boko Haram fighters crossed over from the Nigerian town of Gambaru early Wednesday and attacked border villages in Cameroon. Mal Musa Ledu Blaise, a Cameroonian journalist near the town of Fotokol, told VOA the militants have been provoked by Tuesday's attack on their positions in Gambaru by Chadian forces.
Ils étaient positionnés là-bas. Donc les gens ont commencé à tirer sur eux à partir de Gambaru.
He says the Chadian army attacked Boko Haram's locations in the northern town of Gambaru after insurgents disguised as passers-by shot at hundreds of people and killed three of their soldiers in Fotokol on the border with Nigeria. He adds that the Chadians used their military helicopters to bomb Gambaru. Mal Musa says the insurgents have been attacking mostly Chadian military posts since they crossed over to Cameroon early Wednesday. He says Cameroonian soldiers have mobilized to help the Chadians fight the insurgents.
No, ils étaient en appui, mais ils ne sont pas entrés sur le territoire nigérien.
He says Cameroonian soldiers supported the Chadians from a distance but did not get into the Nigerian territory. He says there was no shooting between the Cameroonian army and the militants, but there was serious shooting between Boko Haram fighters and Chadians. Cameroon military spokesman Colonel Didier Bajek says Cameroonian and Chadian troops have been deployed to Fotokol to fight the insurgents. He says they will be able to engage Boko Haram until a regional force agreed upon at last week's African Union summit is operational.
De solidarité agissante. Le Tchad s'est tenu tout à fait disposé à nous soutenir immédiatement dans la lutte contre Boko Haram.
He says there will be very difficult moments for Boko Haram in the days ahead with the creation of a regional force of 7,500 troops against the insurgents. He says Chad and Cameroon reached bilateral agreements on how to jointly combat Boko Haram after Cameroon's President Paul Biya calls for international support to destroy the militant group and that Chadian and Cameroonian soldiers have been fighting the enemy together. African Union experts are expected to meet in Yaoundé Thursday to draw up strategies on how the force will operate. Chad supported Cameroon after President Paul Biya appealed for a coordinated international response to Boko Haram. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Finally, we look at the latest on the Islamic State. The gruesome killing of a Jordanian pilot, Mu'adh Kasbah, by Islamic State militants appears to be galvanizing Arab public opinion against the group. Edward Irenia reports for VOA from Cairo.
Jordanians mourn the death of pilot Mu'adh Kasbah in mosques across the country Wednesday amid widespread sorrow and indignation. Crowds chanted slogans against the Islamic State group as public figures demanded revenge for the slain pilot. Safi Kasbah, father of the victim, told journalists and others gathered to pay their condolences that Wednesday's execution of two Islamic militants, Sajida Rishawi and Ziad Karboli, is not enough.
أنا أطالب أن لا يكتفى بساجد الرشاوي ولا بزياد الكربولي.
Turkey says that the executions of Rishawi and Karboli are not sufficient to avenge the death of his son, and he urges the Jordanian government to exact a heavy price on the brutal and criminal Islamic State group, which he says sullies the true nature of Islam. King Abdullah, who met briefly with President Barack Obama at the White House Tuesday, arrived home in Amman late Wednesday to face popular calls for action. In a televised address to his people late Tuesday, he insisted that national tragedy has united everyone.
والتحق بمن سبقوا من شهداء الوطن الذين بذلوا.
He says that Muaz Kassaspa has joined the ranks of those martyrs of the nation who have given their lives and blood for the sake of their country. He insists that all Jordanians stand together with the family of their national hero at this time of great tragedy for everyone. The brutal death of the Jordanian pilot, whose fate had become a daily source of anguish in the Arab media, brought many people to tears Wednesday and prompted normally stoic commentators to express grief. In Kassaspa's hometown of Karak, a neighbor condemned the killing. He says what happened is a crime and is unacceptable in Islam. May God bless and keep pilot Muaz Kassaspa, he added. Nevertheless, American University of Beirut political scientist Hilal Kashan pointed out the terrorists cited a verse in the Quran in killing Kassaspa.
They justified their action on the basis that the coalition's air attacks killed many innocent civilians, and they displayed some gruesome images about the outcome of such air raids, including the burning of people alive. Now, in Islam, in Surah Al-Baqarah, or Surah number 2, in verse 194, it says, "If one transgresses against you, you may respond likewise."
Official condemnations of the slaying poured in from across the Arab world. Egypt's venerable Al-Azhar University branded the militants a source of filth and corruption on earth, while Arab League chief Nabil Al-Arabi called the brutal killing a heinous crime. Political leaders in Iraq, the United Arab Emirates, Egypt, and Lebanon also denounced the killing. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song ending a Billet Jadid by original Ras Corby. Been listening to Ras Corby with that song ending a Billet Jadid. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.